Hi. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 29th, 1996. In the fireside room this evening, our speakers are Leslie Johnson and Mara Williams. Today's session number is 1 and is titled, Turning the Tide on Toxics in Your Home, What to Do About Your Household. Let's listen in.
This is Thursday, August 29th, and we're at the end of a wonderfully warm, sunny day. Did anybody see what the temperature was high today? Has it been posted?
It was.
Wasn't too bad today. It's been hotter in other days. And it's 6:20 p.m., and we're in the fireside room at Koinonia. The title of our topic is Turning the Tide on Toxics in Your Home. What to do about your own household hazardous waste. My name is Leslie Johnson, and my friend and neighbor is Mara Williams. We have both been trained by Washington State University Cooperative Extension down in Calhets County where we live, outside of Longview. That's where we live. And we are now master recycler composters. I don't know if you've heard of the Master Gardener program. It's the same sort of setup. We get payback hours for our training by giving speeches around to the community and educating people. So that's how we ended up in this business, as just volunteers talking about recycling and composting and how to handle household hazardous waste. We're going to be talking about everyday items that you use in your home that might be toxics, how you can identify those items, and how you can use, dispose, and avoid them in the first place. I want to tell you sort of a disclaimer. Our information, we try to be as specific as we can. We have information from Washington State University Cooperative Extension, and we also have information from Washington State Toxics Coalition. Oftentimes, Cooperative Extension and Toxics Coalition work together, so we feel free in using recommendations that that they give. We have reference books up here because we'll be using a lot of references. We don't want to give you misinformation because this information is important stuff, and we don't want to make a mistake. We are going to have various products that we're using as a visual aid, but I want to tell you that in no way do we intend to condemn or to promote any of these brand names. We just want to give you a visual aid to help you remember. That is solely our intent. And just because we call something toxic doesn't mean you cannot use it. It's your decision to make. We're also going to be giving you some alternative recipes. And our recipes, again, come from either Washington State University Cooperative Extension, or they come from other cooperative extensions, or from the Washington State Toxics Coalition. Just so you know, the information that you are receiving from us, we have previously received from some agency with that we trust. So, wanted to let you know that. Before we get into the talk, some of you have already picked up the brochures on the music stand as you came in the door. There is definitions of certain words that deal with garbage, basically. And there's also a wonderful brochure called Alternatives that are relatively free of toxic effects. And there's lots of recipes in there for you that you might enjoy. If you have questions, if you live in Calhets County, we have business cards there. Or if you need a memory, you can also pick up one of our business cards. Other brochures around the table are either from talks we've already given here at Holden Village, or the general Enviro Shopping talk we'll be giving tomorrow morning, and the Setting Up a System talk we'll be giving on Saturday afternoon. There's also a three-ring binder full of pictures of things that Mara and I have been doing for recycling and composting. And there's two books out. One is called Worms Eat My Garbage by Mary Applehoff. We used that when we talked to the community about composting with worms, getting rid of your food waste. The other book is called Let It Rot. We recommended that book when we talked to the community about composting, getting rid of yard waste. Those books are both in the bookstore. So if you missed our talks and are interested in those topics, there's brochures to pick up, but also those books are just an excellent source. I think that covers everything now. We can really get into it now, right? Okay. Water washed, spirit born is our theme here at Holden this summer. And I want to tell you a water washed story. See what you think. I bet you can guess. It's out of Genesis, the 7th chapter. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened. The rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On that very same day, Noah, with his sons, Shem and Ham and Jephthah, I think it's Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons entered the ark. They and every wild animal of every kind, and all the domestic animals of every kind, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every bird of every kind, every bird, every winged creature. The flood continued 40 days on the earth, and the waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters swelled and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters. The waters swelled so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. The water swelled above the mountains, covering them 15 cubits deep. And the water swelled on the earth for 150 days. Well, I think everyone here knows the end of that story. And a significant part of that can be found in the 9th chapter of Genesis. God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the clouds, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth." God made a covenant with the earth. But imagine all that water. Water washed. Well, you know, that water, God's provided a way to keep it clean. How many of you can recite the hydrologic cycle from memory? You know, the water evaporates from the oceans, and I think it hits the mountains, caused the clouds to rise and drop their moisture about where we live. I think every bit of moisture on the earth comes down in our house. But the water comes down, and it goes through the earth into the streams, eventually making its way back to the ocean. There's no fresh water. There's clean water, but there's no fresh water. It's an enclosed system. Remember the spaceship Earth we used to talk about back in, what, the 60s, was that? Yeah. So when you think about that, the water you drink, your nice fresh glass of water, is recycled. It's recycled water. One of the things that I like to think about with Christians is there are Christians who like to go to the River Jordan to get water to be baptized in. You don't have to do that. Maybe the water you were baptized in was the same water Jesus was baptized in, because it's all recycled. We just don't know. So it stands to reason that although the hydrologic cycle does help cleanse our water system, there's a possibility that it can get overloaded, especially in certain parts of the earth. So we ought to try and keep it as clean as we possibly can. And that's why Mara and I, one of the reasons that we're into garbage and trying to tell people how to handle it properly, at least what those in the know in our societies who care about such things feel are the best methods. Mara and I aren't necessarily original thinkings on this. We just get what is given to us that we think's pretty good for where we are, and pass it on to you. Now, when we say, let's throw something away, you know, what should I do with this? You know, you ever say, Mom, what do I do with this? Oh, just throw it away. What are the various ways that we throw things away? What are methods? Okay, I'll start out with one. And let's see, how do I want to do this? I want to start out with one of the ways we throw food scraps away is we put them in the garbage disposal, okay? What's another way we sort of throw things away?
Incinerate.
We incinerate. Another way?
Trash can.
Trash can. And what happens to the trash can? Where does it go?
Landfill.
Landfill.
What else? Do you know what happens when you put something down your garbage disposal? Where does it go? Into what system?
Sewage treatment plant.
Okay.
Septic tank.
Keep calling them out. There's more.
But don't we go
composting.
The compost pile. Excellent.
Worm bin too, right?
Recycling. Recycling plant, okay.
You can put it underground with a shovel.
Bury it.
What I'm doing.
Okay, put it in a burn barrel. We've really been imaginative over the years, haven't we? How about flushing it down the toilet? That was a favorite trick of my family way back when. You know, the vegetable soup was just too hard to strain to figure out how to get the liquid from the vegetables. Just flush it down the toilet.
We call a plumber.
Okay, how about some little nasty ways? How about just...
storm drain.
Throw it out the window.
Litter. Storm drain. Oh, let's see, did we get everything? I think we're just about, oh, well. We'll add this. This is an old-fashioned word. Dump. But a dump is different from a landfill. We don't have time to get into that tonight. There's really various ways. You know, you can send it through the sewer system, down to the water supply. You can put it in the landfill or the dump, which is down in the earth. You can bury it down in the earth. You can burn it and cause whatever it is to go up in the air. And the ash can fall back down onto the earth. It's still, those are places that we call where we put things when we throw the garbage away. But you know where away really is? Really, away is in a watershed. Anytime you put anything on the earth, it's always upstream from somewhere. When the rain falls on the earth as part of its purifying hydrologic cycle, it's got to run through the earth, come down through a watershed somewhere and back through its cycle. So whenever you throw anything away, you're putting it into the hydrologic cycle. The stuff in the air, the rain falls through it. It's an interesting thought that all your garbage touches water, or water touches all your garbage. So when you throw something away, you really do have to be careful how you handle it and what effect it has on our water supply. Well, we all hear about the big guys, you know, all the plants on the Columbia River, and Denny works for Mara's husband works for paper plant, I guess the best way to say it,
pulp and paper mill.
Pulp and paper mill, officially. And of course, they have to watch the emissions from their plant, both into the air and into the Columbia River. And the big guys have been monitored. They've really cleaned up their act, don't you think, Denny?
Oh, tremendously. Yeah. About 97% of the solids are taken out, maybe higher than that.
Okay, so they've been worked hard. But you know who hasn't cleaned up their act? It's you and me, or is it you and I? But at any rate, we haven't done it. And it's time, instead of to stop pointing the finger at them, to look at those three fingers accusing us. And start taking actions ourselves. It's now coming down to, they talk about Burley Lagoon over on Puget Sound being cleaned up. It was terribly polluted. You couldn't fish and get shellfish out of there anymore. But they worked on the farms and the septic tanks, household by household, and cleaned up Burley Lagoon. There was no big industry causing that pollution. It was just people and homes and families. So I'm sorry, we can't sit back and relax. We have to take action. And that's what Mara and I are going to tell you about. We're going to tell you about a specific part of your garbage. Isn't that a lovely drawing? I'm going to pass this back over to Mara because as I talk, she's going to be handing out goodies to you to show you. First, though, let me give you a definition about what we mean when we say household hazardous waste. Household hazardous waste, this is an official definition that if you picked up one of those glossaries, I think you'll find this definition in the glossary there, right? Waste that causes special problems for living organisms or the environment because it's poisonous or because it's explosive or because it can burn or dissolve flesh or metal or because it ignites easily with or without flame or because it carries diseases. So that's the stuff we're talking about. Now, how do you know? How can you quickly identify? We came up with some categories, and I have them written on the board here because I like to write on the board. I could help if I spelled too. I think it's with an A. Was that right the first time? It's cataloged with the A, isn't it? Or something. Paints and solvents. Well, I couldn't carry a can of paint or a bottle of paint thinner here. So Mara has this wonderful, she has the thinner, which is fingernail polish, and paint, which is fingernail polish. That represents a can of paint, and it's thinner. I think that's all we had in there, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one is vehicle fluids. Fluids from, you know, your transmission oils or just your regular motor oil. That's a hazardous waste. Pesticides are another group of household hazardous wastes. And I think we have two bottles there. We've got some flea stuff, or that's the, and some Roundup for your garden. These just represent items. I just want you to get an idea. Then there's your regular household cleaners and your polishes. There's things like,
hairspray?
Yeah, that comes under cosmetics. We must have, where's my famous?
Oh.
There's Pam for your kitchen. We have all sorts of miscellaneous stuff in here. It's right here in
your
hand. My furniture polish. Household cleaners. And then we have all these miscellaneous items. We have the hairspray. We have what Mara just put down is cleaner for eyeglasses. It's called anti-fog. Keep your glasses from steaming up. When you inspect the boiling peas, hairspray. What else have we got in here?
Glue.
Future glue.
And a battery.
And a battery. I couldn't bring a car battery either, so you ended up with a little 9-volt. Is that everything in our
Did
storage?
You want the needles?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a, we'll put out a syringe. Some people who live on farms need to give their animals shots. Some people need to give themselves shots if they're going through fertility treatments or whatever. So that's just a variety of, I bet you guys have some of those in your home, don't you? I bet some of you do have some of those. So. Let's look now at the principal hazards. What is it that these can do to us that make them hazardous? They can poison us. They can be corrosive, flammable, volatile, and caustic. Now, poison, you know, that's injurious to your health, to the point of death, maybe. Corrosive usually involves eating away metal in that process, releasing things that we don't like to breathe or get near. Flammable means it's easily combustible. It will go into flames. Volatile means it will vaporize into a gas that you might end up breathing. And caustic means it can eat your skin away. Anybody want to work with this stuff? You know what you don't want to do? You don't want to put any of this in any of those places because those all end up in a watershed. So you don't want to do that. So what are you going to do with it?
I'll tell you.
I can think of three ways to do it. Maybe you have them divided into four, Mara. What are they?
One of the things is you can call locally to see if they have a household hazardous waste collection station. And if you can't find one in your county, then you call the Department of Ecology for your state. And I am lucky enough to live in Cowlitz County, where we have a waste specialist that is a super educator to us volunteers that work with the public, and he keeps us informed about everything that happens at the landfill. On Tuesdays from 9 to 11 in Cowlitz County, you can take your household hazardous waste to the landfill and dispose of them for free. It's sponsored by a grant from Department of Ecology, and he set up this permanent site because before they had mobile sites where once a month in about six communities in Cowlitz County, they would set up a station, a mobile portable station, and people could come to that site and get rid of their hazardous waste. But he thought maybe in the future the money would run out for those grants, so he wanted a permanent site at the landfill. And what I do, I'm the head of the volunteers that man these stations and give public information. And there's booklets that we give out, like here, about safer alternatives, reducing the risk. And there's about 10 pamphlets that we give out to the public and try to educate them on the appropriate ways of doing things for our environment.
Do any of you have a procedure like that in your county or your city?
King County.
King County runs something like that. Well, for those of you who don't, and for those of you who like to use some of these products, I like my Old English furniture polish, thank you very much. here's three other things you can do. Reread the label. Reacquaint yourself with the proper way to use that item. And then use it up. the way you're supposed to do it. That is a perfectly legitimate use of these products. Use it the way you're supposed to use it. That's just fine.
And for the person that can't see the print on these things, take your glasses to the store when you purchase things. And it's really hard for me. I can't read those labels without my glasses. And so remember your glasses.
The other thing you can do if you decide you just, maybe you have young kids or you're thinking about getting pregnant and you just don't want these around your house anymore, maybe you can talk to a friend and find a friend who enjoys using that product. I mean, give it to your friend to use up for you. And the third thing, or maybe this is the fourth thing if we count Mara's disposal system. Well, actually, no, because that was that was my third item, was give to the collection site. So those are just three ways you can handle it. But remember to reacquaint yourself with the proper use of it as you use it up. And remind your friend how to do it, how to use it properly when you give it to your friend. Well, Mara and I, there's this, I forget the passage in the Bible how it goes, but let me show you a better way, or a more perfect manner, or however that phrase goes, I think it's in Corinthians. We're going to show you some alternatives to these products here. But before I do that, do any of you have any questions you want to ask us about what is a household hazardous waste or anything about reading the labels or the... Yes?
I stopped using like Future Floor Cleaner.
Uh-huh.
I read a book, I forget the title, about household cleaners, and I got Canalgo wax. Canalgo, is that a natural source?
Ooh.
And a floor buffer. Like Johnson's paper wax, and it's pure Canalgo wax. What's a Canalgo?
Like C-A-N? Yeah,
it's what you use on your cars, too. Am I saying it right?
Anybody familiar with that product?
I think it's Carnauba, and I think it's an oil from a tropical nut.
Ooh, okay. Okay, yeah, we are not...
But your smells chemically.
Does it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It may have some kind of, like a solvent or something to keep it in a form that you can use. A lot of things, even though they may have a natural base,
yeah,
have a solvent or something so that you can apply it more easily.
And there you go back. A solvent is not a good thing to be using.
Right.
So, any other questions? Yes.
I have one. When you do take those items to the site, the Roos and King County, how do they dispose of them?
Well, they have connections to the landfills that take chemicals in. And I know like the paints, a lot of the paints, I know when I work at the site, any of us that are volunteers, they welcome us to take those paints home and use them if we can, according to the label. And they have their connections and they dispose of them properly because they're special landfills just for hazardous waste.
Yeah, that are specially
built. And they know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
But they try to market as much as they can or so they save the money, but they do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a lot of fertilizers a lot of times when people, they're not hazardous, but they want to get rid of them, so I get to take them home.
It's important to keep these items in their original containers so that, you know, a month down the road, you remember what's in the container and how to use it. Or if you take it to a disposal site, the people in the disposal site know what it is and how to handle it.
It's very expensive to identify an unlabeled thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whereas
yes.
If they know what it is, they go ahead and process it. But if they just get a mystery can, it's very expensive. It's a very high fine for an industry to have an unmarked container in a workplace, too, just for that reason. It's so hard to...
Martin has a question.
Yes, once these chemicals go to these plants, then what happens to them? Are they...
You mean our household hazardous waste?
Yes. Ones?
Well, how many of you are familiar with a paint color called Seattle Brown? I think it's on schools down in California. But that's a mixture of, I think it's the latex paints that have come in or mixed together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They mix all the colors of anything that they get and it comes out being brown.
Yeah. Sort of a unique shade of brown. I've never seen it myself. But
once the county collects them, they're taken care of the appropriate way.
Yeah, some of the items they are able to retrieve some good out of the item. Your motor oil, for example, can be recycled and reused again, I'm sure. Do they, I don't remember what the term is for motor oil that has been cleansed and
re-refined, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's it, but it's something like that. So it's what they do with it and where they send it also depends on what's going on with the laws and the communities. Mm-hmm. So when we ask our connection with our hazardous waste disposal site, when we ask our connection there, his answer may change from month to month. He just has to keep up with the market and know where to take these things.
I'm on our solid waste advisory committee meeting, and I was there when they rewrote the plan. I have never gone through so much confusing words. I mean, every word counts. The way they write it down, it has to be technically correct, and there's all these agencies that come and look at this plan, and Department of Ecology is there at those meetings, and the health department from our county is there. So between all these agencies and everything, I know that things are done properly. It's really a big, big process.
I think we have to say as properly as we think is correct. I wouldn't be surprised if X number of years down the road, people are going to laugh at us as much as we laugh at the people who used to dump their garbage off the ferries in Puget Sound.
Well, I was reading a couple of years ago about a process called a thermal reactor, which actually takes, you can take just about any of the chemicals and put it into this thermal reactor, and it'll break it down to more of a simple kind of elements.
That they can then do something
that
with?
They can do something.
That'd be wonderful. I also hear of certain flowers. I think the sunflower is one that will do something with some of those hazards. It takes a little bit longer.
We had a number of companies come in and give presentations about, you know, what to do with a lot of these things. But what happens, sometimes the county gets hooked up with something that hasn't been tried before, and then they find out it doesn't work, and then they're stuck with a lot of equipment and money that is no longer worthwhile.
Is there another question? Yes.
If I use one of those products that are classified as household hazardous waste, and I use it up, like the motor oil, mm-hmm. and I report low in my car, and I pour in a quart, put the lid on, there's still some residue in that bottle. Mm-hmm. Is that household hazardous waste?
Certain recycling areas will take it with the lid on, and you keep the lid on, and I'm really not quite sure who processes it or that. But it's in a recyclable container that has an arrow underneath it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some. Otherwise, what do you have to do?
It's in the
garbage.
You know, then it goes to the landfill.
That's what the utilities tell you to do.
My
wife, who is into this sort of stuff, tells me that I must rinse out everything, all the plastic and the tin cans and everything.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to rinse out your oil.
Not the oil. But I know in our county landfill, they also take oil filters, and they ask you to have them drip out, you know, as much of the stuff as they can, but they have a certain container that they take the oil filters.
You can do it right there on site.
Did you talk about the toxicity?
I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Did I talk about toxicity? On the labels, on the containers, you will find a single word, and it will be either caution, warning, or danger. And this is sort of like if you live in the Midwest, what do you have, a hurricane watch, and then a tornado watch, and then whatever it goes on up to, I know there's
tornado warning.
Warning, watch, alert, or
watch, and then warning.
Watch, warning. Okay, well, this is sort of the same thing. It's caution, warning, and danger.
Do you read these on these containers? When you
occasionally.
Well, if I read this right here, it says continual contact with used gasoline motor oil has caused skin cancer in laboratory animals. Avoid contact with used motor oil. In case of skin contact, wash thoroughly with soap and water. Avoid prolonged breathing of mist or vapor. Clean oil-soaked clothing before reuse. This stuff gets kind of scary when you start reading some of the fine print.
Well, we'd like, if it's all right with you guys, to tell you about some alternatives. Are you ready for that? Before we do, I want to read an interesting quote from the 11th chapter of Revelation.
And this is the point in Revelation where the seventh angel has blown his trumpet and the 24 elders have been singing. And this is the last part of the elders' song. I'm just going to read you the very ending of it. They start out with, "The time has come for various things." And the last one is, "For destroying those who destroy the earth." So we don't want to destroy the earth, at least Mara and I don't. Hope you don't either. And we have alternatives for these products. Now, we've told you that household hazardous waste can be divided into these basic categories. Okay, so we're going to go through the categories. The first one is vehicle fluids. Now, what do you think would be an alternative to things like motor oil or transmission fluid?
Bike tour.
What?
Bike tour.
Excellent. Bicycle. What else?
Public transportation.
Public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Walking.
Walking. Honestly, that's, you know, we looked. They all say alternatives, none. So the only thing you can do is to reduce your use.
I wonder, I don't know if this is an alternative or not, but I wonder how it relates. I have a friend that's an airline mechanic.
Uh-huh.
He says that they actually use synthetic oil. Now, they don't use the kind that we usually use in our cars. So is that any better? I mean, ecologically, is that any better?
Ecologically, I don't know.
I would think
synthetic oil would still have hazard to it, mm-hmm. even though it's, I'm not sure what it's made out of.
It sounds like one of the reasons they use it is because it lasts so much longer, so they use a lot less.
So you've reduced mm-hmm. a lot. Yeah, that may be the thing.
Well, any of those three key words, caution, warning, and danger, tells you it's a hazardous waste.
Okay, let's take a look at paints and solvents. What can you do as an alternative?
It's siding on your house.
Redwood siding? You've got all those lovely redwood trees? Is that what you said?
Aluminum
siding. What did you sell when you were aluminum siding? Okay, well, let's see. Then we have the electricity to make all that aluminum, don't we? Yes, indeedy. I don't really have an alternative to paint, although in certain cases, for certain types of buildings, maybe it's okay to just let them weather. See that a lot in Alaska.
At least if you use water-based paints, you eliminate the solvent aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, water-based paints are, whenever you can use them, use them. Yes?
Do stains last longer?
Stains, in other words, if you stained your house, you may only have to do that
every 7-8 years instead of every 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years, so you're using less. Again, it's sort of a reduction process, using less, finding ways to use less of the product. Okay. How about pesticides? Can anybody think of something that would be an alternative to pesticides? Good. I see your head going up and down.
Well, there's lots.
Hmm?
You can get ladybugs and praying mantises.
Okay.
Plants that aren't susceptible to pests.
Get plants that aren't susceptible to pests. Anything else?
Since she said that, let me put in.
Okay, put in a plug for your rose, Mara.
I'm also a master gardener, and I've been one since 1988. In those 8 years, I've seen a drastic change in pesticide use. It's gone down drastically. And we're trying to educate the public to be tolerable of some of those things like strawberry root weevil in rhododendrons. You buy resistant kind. In roses, buy a resistant kind. And this came out, and I'm not plugging this rose, but I bought one of these roses where it says no spraying, no dusting, no pruning, no kidding. And I have it in a pot on my deck. It has the prettiest, greenest foliage in the world. The blooms are gorgeous. My deer don't come out on the deck and eat it. And it's truly nice to watch even before it blooms, except the blossoms aren't fragrant. But now more and more plant nurseries are coming out with plants and trees and things like that that are resistant to the different insects or funguses in that. And that way you don't have to spray. The chemical companies won't like it. But they're taking more and more pesticides off the market each year. And we learn about them, and each year we get a new book on weed control in our extension office. And a lot of times at plant clinics, people want to know, what can I kill that bug with? And so we're trying to educate the public on, you know, using that as a last resort.
Speaking of what you can kill that bug with,
what
can you kill aphids with?
You can wash them off, hand pick them, buy plants that are resistant to aphids, and what was the other ones? I've got this written down here.
So,
biological control, which she mentioned.
You mean getting ladybugs?
And the one thing about it, they made a mistake when they imported lady beetles from Japan, because these lady beetles have different habits. They don't go into the woods to hibernate. They go in people's homes.
And any of you have the lady beetles or ladybugs? They look a little bit different than what we used to have around here.
Maybe we're the only ones that were inundated with them.
Red with black dots.
Yeah.
It would be hard to tell by looking. Yeah. To me, they look the same.
Do they?
They're a little different.
They're a little different.
But we had them in our church, and try playing handbells with your partner screaming and yelling that she's got a lady beetle crawling down her neck.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm old enough that I lived before we had any pesticides. So we had to handle the problem. And I can remember my mother sending me to the garden to pick worms off of the tomato plants.
Oh, really?
So we picked them, and what did we do with them? Took them to the chickens.
See, Rudy, you're going to see it come clear around in your generation, because that's what they're going back to.
And we had a very bad infestation of grasshoppers at one time, I can remember. I can remember helping my father rig up a kind of a board trough arrangement, and he put a horse on each end, and we drug that through the field, and we collected grasshoppers by the bushel.
My goodness.
You know, things like that. So
what'd you do
before
with
we had pesticides, you had to do something else.
Yeah, there was something else you could do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you run through your list? I have some things I want to talk about.
But I wanted you to read about, if you happen not to want to do the controls that Rudy and I have done, if you do use pesticides, you use the ones that are least toxic, and there's like an insecticidal soap, you know, for aphids. And Leslie will read you the warnings.
And the other thing you do that's very practical is to rotate plants, rotate crops, you know, so that you don't allow the pests to build up.
It's called now integrated pest management. So if you ever see those words, this is what Rudy's talking about.
IPM, often it's just the initials.
IPM, and it's
and
it's
coming back to it.
They're coming back to it in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. We're having an awful lot of trouble with fire ants.
With what?
Mm-hmm. Fire ants.
Fire ants.
They're terrible. Get rid of them.
I've sat on them before.
They're solid under the ground.
I saw an ant dance you've never seen before in your life.
And you come up in another, and they just terrible pests.
Whenever it rains, which it does occasionally,
in one of my books, there's some alternatives what you can do with handling ants, but I can't recall the recipe, but it's one of our resources.
It's this one that I'm going to read from. So let me read you about, you know, some of you are still going to use pesticides, go to the store and buy them. So I wanted to read these six warnings here. No pesticide is considered safe, but because of the effects on other living things, some are safer to use than others. Before selecting a pesticide, become informed about all the effects it may have. Don't just read the label, talk with the nursery attendant if you can. When you use any pesticide, please follow all of these 6 points. Number one is to read and follow all of the label instructions. And never use more than is recommended. More is not necessarily better when it comes to pesticides, okay? The second one is to protect yourself. By the time you get through this stage, you'll think picking the bugs off are easier. Wear a long sleeve shirt, long pants, boots, rubber gloves, goggles, a hat, and a respirator. Now, a respirator is not just this little cotton mask that goes over your face when you clean ash.
Carbology?
Yeah. You know, we're talking about a major thing here, a respirator, whenever mixing and applying pesticides of any kind. So that includes the mixing.
Rule number three, never apply a pesticide on a windy day. You want to be able to control exactly where it goes.
And at our plant clinic, we actually have people, neighbors coming in and thinking their neighbor is spraying. And we let the county extension take care of it. As a volunteer, we don't have to handle it. But it's amazing how many people come in and complain about neighbors with their spraying and thinking it's affecting their plants.
Rule number four is only mix as much as you will use in one day. That means once you've mixed it up and you've got it all rid of, you can quit early, you know. So mix up a small batch. Now, rule number five, dispose of empty containers properly. And this is sort of what Stuart was getting at a little bit ago. Okay, when a product says triple rinse the container, here's what you're supposed to do. Rinse the container out three times. And take that rinse water and pour it back into your pesticide sprayer. And then apply it to the area where you want to apply the pesticide. Of course, all according to the label instructions. It's just that it's more dilute at this point. So you do that
wrap it in a newspaper and throw it in the trash.
Yeah. Wrap it up in newspaper, and then you put it in your regular trash system. Uh-huh. Okay. Yes, they all will have the little chasing arrows that on plastics, and they have a number in the center that says this is recyclable. That isn't true with pesticide containers. Yes, the container may be recyclable, but if it had a pesticide in it, even if you've rinsed it three times, please don't send it to a recycling center. Wrap it in newspaper and put it in your trash. And then rule number six, dispose of unwanted pesticides safely. Because pesticides are hazardous, they should never be disposed in your garbage can or poured down the drain, into storm drains, or on the ground. Do you understand the difference between pouring something down the drain and pouring something down a storm drain? Do I need to explain that storm drains do not go to any sort of treatment system? They go directly into our streams
and
our
rivers? Depends where you live.
Untreated? Do you have storm drains that go to your sewer?
A lot of cities have common storm drains, or sewer
really?
Drains, yes.
Hmm. Really? Then what do they do in a heavy rainfall? How does the sewer system handle?
They overflow into their nearest river, lake.
So everything ends up getting over. Oh, I'm glad I asked you that question. So it's, okay. So in our city, I believe it's a separate system. Mm-hmm. The storm drain goes directly to the Columbia River and all those lovely
sand. Their drainage ditches, or in my youth, we called them sloughs.
Yes. Uh-huh. And the sewage system goes to the sewer treatment plant. So don't put them down your drain. Don't put them down your storm drain. And don't put your pesticides directly onto the ground. Take them to a hazardous waste disposal facility. Give them to a neighbor. Or maybe there's a community garden. Well, usually they are pretty organically oriented, mm-hmm. but sometimes you can do that. So anything else about pesticides that we need to clear up? Oh, okay.
We've got cleaners, too.
Yes, number four and five are household cleaners. And
yes,
question.
Are there any alternatives for pesticides for fleas?
Yes, there's also. What do you use?
I haven't used anything yet. Oh. I'm into a carpet that I need to treat, and I really love it.
Why don't you check with us later? We got the references here, and you could take a look at them and find the information.
We do have. I have five hats. I can tell you.
I have 10 things from Washington Toxics Coalition that talks about safer cleaning. Products, alternatives for, art and hobby supplies, aphids, and appropriate plants for the landscape and lawn care, the whole bit. Everything what, you can do. And you're free to look at these and catch us at any time and ask to see some of these resources.
Okay, Mara, would you remove the motor oil and the pesticide container? We've discussed those. And the other pesticide container, the Roundup container. And pass me the syringe container, please. This is not on my list, but I want to go over it. I guess it's under this household miscellaneous items. I do not have an alternative to a syringe. Nobody. I don't think. There are maybe some people who do that. I don't know. This is not. I'm not having enjoyment using a needle. But most people who do need to use needles on their farm or in their home know what to do with them. You can buy special disposal containers from your pharmacy, or maybe they come when you buy your needles. I'm not into this. I don't know. but they do have special containers that you can put your used syringes into. I'm sure you've all seen them in your doctor's offices, the containers they have. And when you come to a place like Holden, where garbage is
hand sorted
and a very important commodity that has to be dealt with, it all has to be trucked downriver, folks. Or floated downriver, barged down lake, that's the term, isn't it? It would be nice if you found a little container like this and you could bring your syringes home yourself. Okay?
If you don't want to do that, the nurse will take them.
The nurse, yes. I was going to say that next too, but I didn't want to. Why should we load her up with house with this to just barge down river? Why not take out your own? That's just my thought. Okay, so this is our next category, which is just a bunch of stuff that we have trouble separating out. So
and batteries also go to household hazardous waste. A lot of people don't realize.
Yeah, even your little household batteries are in our county. Mm-hmm. Everything from the big batteries to the little tiny ones like that are collected. And of course, there are all alternatives. There are the rechargeable batteries, which help a lot. Or there's playing with toys that don't involve things that go and make noise, and jump up and down and twirl, and all those sorts of things.
Are batteries recyclable, batteries themselves?
I don't think so, but I think that with the larger batteries, it seems to me like Jim told me with the larger batteries, they can recover something out of them.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that, so maybe I should.
I know from past experience, there are some operations in the 60s and 70s that used to take car batteries and chop up the plates and stuff like that, but that I was involved in the legal field for 7 years that dealt with Superfund cleanup sites, and some of the cleanup sites were these processing plants that did this, but they ended up having a lot of material go into the ground, so their 10 acres of land is now heavily polluted. So. I assume some places do it now under a more watchful eye, and probably successfully. But
interesting. Okay. Right. At least we know that somebody is trying.
Yeah.
I think we can safely say that somebody's trying to come
let's
up with
a method. Let's get to the household cleaners.
Okay. Okay. Household cleaners. Mara, let's get rid of that pledge. That English. What have you got?
Pam.
We'll just trade that out.
Okay.
Oh, you put away the Pam. I meant put away the English.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, let's take out the whole cleaning kit.
The whole cleaning kit?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm happy to report Holden is doing things the correct way. In our chalet, we have a little cleaning kit. The only thing they didn't have in our room was baking soda. And Leslie, why don't you run up there and do a quick recipe?
Okay.
Our sink in the chalet was running slow. I hope you noticed the difference, Martin and Renee. Here's
I
what
I the baking soda too.
Oh, okay. Here's the way to undo the sinks that are running slow or clogged. Pour 1/2 cup of baking soda, followed by 1/2 cup of vinegar. You close the drain, and then you wait 5 minutes, and then you pour a whole tea kettle full of boiling water and repeat if needed. And it really worked. But I have two things I want to add about doing these different recipes. Do not use this method after a commercial drain opener has been used or is still present in standing water. And the reason why, if you have a chemical that reacts to vinegar, it can be a toxic fumes or that. And here I have a note to say, do not use vinegar if you add chlorine bleach to your rinse water, and that will produce harmful vapors. So anytime you have any cleaners, especially commercial cleaners, a lot of times if they're mixed, like bleach is mixed with ammonia, it's very toxic. So be real, real careful on how you handle things. Yes?
So the boiling water can crack the porcelain?
No.
It has. So you have to be really careful to keep the water stream right in the drain rather than letting it
run. Did you all hear that one?
Because I've done it a number of times at home, and I.
You probably just did it right.
Okay, but it's nice.
You have had that happen
to
you.
It's nice to hear these things because.
What she said is that after she puts in the baking soda and the vinegar and lets it sit for 5 minutes, and then she lifts off the plug and starts to pour in the boiling water.
I do it slowly.
You have poured in the boiling, she had her porcelain crack. because the boiling water went right onto the porcelain.
And she
Yeah. So she recommends pouring it down the drain, not just pouring it in the mold.
Maybe you had a flaw in your porcelain.
You know, probably so.
Yeah, but you know, it's something. It's something to.
But anyway, Shelley 11C6 running fine now.
Pardon? How about a hot water supply that just doesn't hardly put out?
Fix it.
You know what? I put that stuff in before I almost got the water boiling. I thought, come on, water.
Oh, it's after more than 5 minutes, you mean, because the water wasn't right. Okay, you got another recipe?
Okay, a real simple window cleaner is 1/4 cup white vinegar to 1 quart of warm water.
What are we talking about?
Window cleaner. I use this at home. And you know what? I have this book here that's called Buying Smart, Buy Safe. And if you do buy commercial products, it tells you which ones are the least toxic. And they said the Consumer Reports had did a study, and they said that, you know, just using soap and water or whatever is just as good as any of the cleaners. So,
you know, one thing,
why not save money?
One thing on this window cleaner solution that sort of always bothers me is a quart of window washing solution, I think, is a lot.
Not when you have windows like we
do. If you're doing the whole house, yeah, but if you just want some solution on your bathroom something, I would cut this recipe down because no longer are you going to have warm water. By the time you get to the fifth window, you know, water's going to be cold.
And I think the Holden might use this recipe because I talked to Charlie and he said they used borax. And an all-purpose cleaner is 1 teaspoon liquid soap, 1 teaspoon borax, a squeeze of a lemon or a splash of vinegar. This is like cooking. And 1 quart warm water.
I'm writing these recipes on the board because you won't find them in your alternatives brochure. So these are from a different source.
And Leslie and I have also tried one to get out rust stains on white shirts like you have out there. I better make sure I say it correctly. Saturate with lemon juice, and then with salt, rub in salt, and if possible, dry in direct sunlight, then wash. And I don't know where Leslie and I got it, but I usually lay my shirt on the grass, and I don't know why. And she lays it on bushes.
I told you to. That's why.
I had some linen napkins that had rust stains in it, and I couldn't believe it. It was like a miracle. It came off.
Oh.
The grass took it off with the solution.
I wore a rust stain.
Yes.
Does the borax recipe in here really get mildew out of bathroom?
Well, University of Florida, since it's an extension, should have thoroughly tested all those recipes. Okay. But some of theirs, I don't have borax at home, so I use all the recipes that I have these ingredients with. And this kit I have in a little wooden thing with a handle. We received one for being educators, so I got to use those. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of neat, but I didn't want all that to hold them, so I had that other cute little bag to put it in.
There's a neat thing about alternative. Oh.
And then you have to have a scrubbing pad and a cloth.
Yeah. Just good
old diapers are good, too. Did we mention the soap, the Castile soap?
I don't know if you did.
I don't think we did.
It's oil soap.
Okay, or Castile soap.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I can buy some of this because I like this better than Murphy's. It smells better.
One of the neat things about using alternative cleansers is that the products are easily obtainable. Most of them you can buy, you know, right in the grocery store. What's also interesting about it is that most of these products you can buy with food stamps. So if you know someone who's on food stamps and squeaking by and needing assistance to get by, if instead of they're buying the commercial cleansers, if they go to alternative uses, they can perhaps stretch their budget. I want to read you some of these items. I went through one of our, I think it was this Turning the Tide book I went through, and I made a list of all of the ingredients in all of the recipes. And here's some of the ingredients. Vinegar, white vinegar, lemon juice, baking soda, club soda, salt, flour, cornstarch, cornmeal, olive oil, vegetable oil, walnut oil, water, boiling water, ice cube, lime, orange, ketchup,
Worcestershire sauce, dry mustard, black pepper, powdered sugar, regular sugar, corn syrup, molasses, sour milk, skim milk, butter, margarine, shortening, garlic cloves, egg, gelatin, coffee, beer, cream of tartar, meat tenderizer, peeled potatoes, mashed potato buds, cocoa powder, oatmeal, celery salt, toothpaste, and aluminum foil. Isn't that an interesting list for your cleaning closet?
The people that live in Washington, you can call the Department of Ecology. It's a free, toll-free number, and ask for one of these for free. They'll mail it to you, turning the tide.
Can you have a commercial for toothpaste? One weekend, Lynn was gone in a women's retreat, and my four-year-old, I took a black marker that was permanent.
Oh.
And put it on the dining room table.
Oh. What is the dining room table made of?
Oak.
Okay. And so it was like an oiled surface,
yeah,
or?
Yeah.
Varnished?
Varnished.
Okay.
What got it out was toothpaste.
Toothpaste, no. Yeah. One frantic father.
Was that Charter Control toothpaste?
Well, either that or it was the last weekend of my life.
I tell you, it was only elbow grease. It had nothing to do with the toothpaste.
I would have been dead when she came home. After she came home.
Yes.
Another one for toothpaste, because the recipe for silver here says not for use on silver jewelry. Toothpaste cleans silver beautifully.
Oh, it does.
And toothpaste cleans color grain off the walls.
Oh. Okay. When shopping for the items too, I noticed on this that it's a number 2 plastic, so that's recyclable, which is kind of neat. If you're going to buy something, it's nice when you can recycle the container. And I think, Leslie, you had the one in our chalet, the Murphy's Oil, which is an excellent product, that was in a number 5 plastic, which isn't readily recyclable in most communities. But we don't know if they had a large container, and maybe it was an old spray bottle because it's leaking now. That's why I didn't bring it down.
It looks like it had been refilled, refilled several times.
But on most of your products, there's a toll-free number, and if it's in a plastic that's not recyclable in your community, give them a call. It's free, and tell them you want it put in a recyclable container, or you won't buy their product, and they'll change it. I've seen a lot of things change to number 2 containers, because I think the public asked for it.
I also noticed a lot of those products are coming out in pump sprays and not running in the aerosol.
Yeah, right.
Yes, like Pam, for the kitchen, for greasing pans, you can buy in a pump spray instead of an aerosol spray, which I use. More questions? Yes.
Oh, I just had a comment. I worked at the Arboretum in Seattle, and I had to buy a picnic table for the Arboretum. Somebody was trying to donate it. And it was really hard to buy a wood picnic table, but what they're really pushing out, and what I found out, that the Washington State Parks are buying recycled picnic tables made from these containers that were recycled. So it closes the loop, and I just thought that was a really neat thing to find out. And I got to buy one for the Arboretum, so.
But I noticed that in a demo site in Olympia, they bought one of the picnic tables recycled on a hot day or something. Somebody must have sat on it because it's bowed.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You have to be careful, too, because you don't know what will happen. It's a good deal, but maybe they needed an extra support in the middle of, a break.
Oh,
okay. We got a couple of more minutes, more comments, more questions.
For people that live in Washington State in particular, the traditional decking material has always been cedar, and mm-hmm. we don't like cutting down our old growth forests anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's a product called Trax now that's a combination of plastic and newsprint, if you believe that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you spell Trax?
TREX or AX, one of the two.
Okay, Trax.
And it looks just like boards. In fact, the deck down at the B&B was made out of it.
You don't say.
And that was where I first heard about it. When it comes, it looks brown, but within 6 weeks, it weathers to a nice gray, and it doesn't require any finishing, and it should be good indefinitely.
Plastic?
It's plastic.
And
newsprint.
Newsprint.
And it's like a non-skid surface or whatever.
And it's like a non-skid surface. Mm. It doesn't get
all gooey with algae and everything in the wintertime, apparently, and it doesn't require any finishing.
There are catalogs, too, that you can get, and I think Seattle put it out about buying recycled, and they tell about the businesses that sell the recycled products. And I think I have one at home, but I must have not brought it with me. But a lot of times, you know, with the Department of Ecology, Washington Toxics Coalition, I also belong to Washington Citizens for Resource Conservation. That's where I get most of the latest information, because things change rapidly. Mm-hmm. And so if people, you know, want to be members, there's information here how to become members of it, and then you get current information, especially a lot about the toxics.
Yes,
so I can keep updated on them.
Well, I just wanted to say a little bit about the plastic boards. We have, in the office where I work, we have crab boats, and so we're buying these recycled plastic boards, similar to ones they use in picnic tables, are about 2x6 or so. And they use it on the area where they land the crab pots. If these pots weigh over 1,000 pounds and come down with tremendous force filled with product of crab or cod or something. So in a year, I can report on strong they are.
Because you know, you never know what's going to happen with sunlight working on it and forces.
Right now we use
apitong,
which is a Filipino hardwood. And it comes from the Philippine Islands, and it's becoming increasingly rare, and it's really a durable wood, one of the most durable in the world.
Interesting.
And we're replacing it with this plastic.
Okay. Hey, well, I just want to close with basically the t-shirts that Mara and I are wearing. Mara's has
Treasure of the Earth,
and mine has this. We creek salmon come up our creek, and I can count them standing in my kitchen
window. I call her up in the morning and say the salmon are coming up. Go look out your
window. I don't know if I'm too short to tell, but you see this. I wear this only during salmon season, and notice the little tenny runners on my salmon running up creek.
And mine has all the critters that I want to preserve. So. And it has water in there, too.
And not only is handling your household hazardous waste something important for these critters, it's also important for the health of you and your children.
And grandchildren.
And your grandparents, whoever lives in your house with you. So we ask you to take care with your household hazardous waste. Please pick up brochures and try some of these alternative recipes. They have all been tested, so they should be safe. And I thank you for coming tonight, and some of you have more questions, so continue asking. We have 10 minutes to Vespers. Go ahead. Gentlemen in the way back, did you have a question?
No.
Okay, really?
I have a comment.
Comment, okay. Wise comment.
You're at Holland Village.
Yes.
Right now. And you're within a half a mile or a mile of the wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the wilderness, there is no waste.
There is no waste.
And I think it's a good educational exercise to, when you make a hike to Holden or Hart, just get off of the trail 10 feet and gingerly and look and see what's there. And if anything that you can't find in a wilderness is waste. That is, if you can't find it in the wilderness and you find it in your home, it's something that is a pollutant. And if you start out with a pristine environment, and we have polluted it with all of the things we do in relation to civilization, we've gone a long way. It's very difficult to go back now to the point that we cure things. So the solution is very difficult.
It's one person at a time now.
Yeah, you know, I've written a little paper that you might pick up and read someplace. It has three words: wilderness, Holden, civilization. And that's a transition, you see. Because we came in here, this area was a wilderness.
Yes.
Now Holden is a transition between wilderness and civilization. It's worse out there than it is here. That's the point. And at least we're doing something in the Holden area to make the transition feasible and to move back as far as we can. We obviously are not going to move all the way back, but many of these solutions that you're advocating, is it a move in the right direction?
Thank you. Thank you for those words. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming. We appreciated your comments. And the man who has fire ants, please come forward. And somebody else is looking for a flea recipe. You may take as many as you want. There's coloring books for kids.